Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. When Kevin Powers returned from serving with the Army in Iraq, friends and family wanted to know what was it like. His response, a fictional account called The Yellow Birds, in which he portrays the war and the places as he knew it. Here to talk with us today about that story and how it communicates the complexity of his experience and addresses larger questions about the war in general is author Kevin Powers. In 2004 and 2005, Kevin served with the U.S. Army in Mosul and Tal Afar, Iraq. After his honorable discharge, he studied English at Virginia Commonwealth University and then received a Master in Fine Arts in Poetry from the Michener Center for Writers at the University of Texas at Austin in 2012. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Thank you very much for having me.
So you are getting amazing reviews, incredible reviews. The book is being compared to, among other classics, All Quiet on the Western Front. And you said you wrote it in a small apartment in Austin, and sometimes it's hard to imagine getting that kind of response to something like this.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, I wasn't, you know, I thought the work I was doing was interesting to me. It was compelling to me, but you do wonder whether anybody else will feel the same way. So it is gratifying that people do seem to be responding to it.
What inspired you to use the internal struggle and the voice of one man to tell the story of the war?
Well, you know, I think about, there's a quote from Tim O'Brien where he says that there are as many wars as there are men and, of course, now women who fight in them. So I wanted to make sure that I was acknowledging the fact that there are, you know, there's a broad diversity of experience that I didn't feel like I had the authority to speak for every person who served, but I did want to offer an example of what that experience may have been like, particularly for this one character that I've created, John Bartle.
I mentioned earlier that your work has been compared to All Quiet on the Western Front, a book by a German veteran of World War I, and I wondered about what you thought about that comparison.
Well, I mean, it certainly deals with some of the same things, the difficulty of, you know, there's that scene where he goes home and has to deal with his teacher and the sort of aimlessness and the pointlessness of that experience is something that that I felt, the kind of the repetition, the lack of control, but I'm happy to let other people make whatever comparisons mm-hmm. they want. I'm you know, happy to let my book stand on its own and people can make their own decisions about it.
My guest is Kevin Powers, poet, writer, and veteran of the Iraq War. We're talking about his new book. It's called The Yellow Birds. If you have a question or comment for Kevin, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to our Facebook page and you can tweet us at WOSU, All Sides. You open with the line, "The war tried to kill us in the spring." And already here you establish that the war has an urgency to it. And I was wondering how you went about writing about the war as a character with a personality, because it's not the only reference like that.
Right. Well, I think there is the sense, particularly for the narrator, that he's inside of something that has more power, more agency, and more control than he does. He feels like he's just been swept up in this experience, and he doesn't have any control. And it looks to him as though the war is something almost independent, that it has its own mind and its own will, and he feels completely inadequate to control his own circumstances.
Sometimes people wonder, well, all right, you were in the Iraq War, you're a veteran of the Iraq War, but what did you really do? And it says that you were deployed as a machine gunner, pretty right there in your face kind of a job in a war, right?
Well, sure, but I mean, certainly there were many, many soldiers who experienced more difficult times in their tours than I did. I was a machine gunner for a combat engineer unit. Our primary job was to make sure that if there were IEDs on the road that we found them. My job within that unit was to provide security the best they possibly could. So, you know, my experience wasn't as intense as what these characters in the novel go through, but I do feel like I had some access to that experience.
Did you know you wanted to write a story about the war when you were in the war?
I didn't, no. I mean, I've considered myself a writer, somebody who tries to understand the world through words since I was fairly young, 12, 13. But no, it didn't occur to me until probably 2 years had passed that I wanted to try to tell this story.
And so when you were there, did you keep a journal that helped you reconnect with the feelings and the experiences and the influences?
I did, you know, I did keep something of a journal, but I have to be honest with you, I didn't really go to it all that often. Hmm. I think one of the focuses of the book is the way that memory affects this character, and particularly when after he's come home and he's trying to make sense of these memories. So for me, you know, using my own memories as kind of a mirror for his experience and the difficulty of sometimes the difficulty of remembering specifics, but also the challenge of the act of remembering itself. Those I think had a profound impact on what the way I focused the story and what the emphasis was.
There's obviously a ton of literature. Lots of various war novels, classic ones emerging still from wars like Vietnam or World War II. What was it like to tackle such recent history as a writer?
Well, I suppose in a way it was still very fresh in my mind. I don't know. I mean, I guess the fact that it was something that's still ongoing didn't really... It didn't feel like it would prevent me from saying something rooted in my own experience, my own imagination, my own interpretation of that time. You know, again, as I said before, it's not something where I'm trying to make a definitive statement about the war as a whole, but rather to simply provide one example of what that experience could be like.
Were you inspired by any other literature as you framed the book and the story?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There are books that have been extraordinarily important to me, both about war and not. There's a novel called Meditations in Green by Stephen Wright, which is a novel about Vietnam, which is, I think, strange and hallucinatory and really remarkable, and I think underread. There's also a poet named Youssef Koumanyaka, who I just think is magnificent. But also books like The Stranger, where you know the character is unable to kind of locate himself or root himself in any sort of moral center. I mean, those all provided some influence to the kind of questions that I had and how to go about answering them. Or at least attempting to answer them.
Tell us about the title of the book, The Yellow Birds. Why did you name it that?
Well, the title comes most directly from a marching cadence. I'm sure anybody who's listening that served in the military will recognize that it begins, "A yellow bird with a yellow bill was perched upon my windowsill." But it also includes surprising moments of violence, the cadence, I mean. So I just thought including that cadence as kind of an epigraph and then having the title, which is, it almost seems pastoral in a way and something beautiful and peaceful, and then to open the book and see the full effect of that cadence, I thought it would be a way of introducing the reader to the kind of shifts in focus that the narrator is going to experience in the book.
Yeah, it gets very, very violent very quick. War is only like itself is a quote taken from your work. that it's incredibly poignant, but that doesn't necessarily mean I know exactly what you mean by it. How did you, what did you mean by it, and how did you come to that?
Well, the response that, I would get that question, what was it like over there? I first had to try to figure out an answer that made sense to me before I could even begin to try to answer it for anybody else. So trying to think of some experience that might be analogous to being in a war, I have to confess, I mean, I came up empty. It does seem that something so extreme as armed combat between human beings, I'm not sure if there's an actual situation that equals that. So the approach that I took was to allow the story to focus on this one character's interior life, the decisions that he makes, the way those decisions affect him, the difficulty of returning home. Because I felt like if I was focusing on the emotions, people would be able to connect to the story, and they would have, if not an answer to that specific question, then at least an access point for thinking about it.
It's a story of friendship as well, and detachment, and that kind of goes to the marching cadence about the yellow bird, and the detachment between that little yellow bird on the windowsill and what eventually happens to it. How does friendship fare on the battlefield in your experience, and how'd you bring that to the book?
Well, I mean, it's complex. I mean, the people that you're with, at least in my experience, are absolutely the most important people in your life, without question. But at the same time, there's an underlying fear of what you're putting at risk by investing so much in the kind of friendship, the love even, knowing that at any moment that you or somebody else could be killed or seriously wounded. So it's a fluid. I think the emotions that you feel are fluid, and I wanted to make sure that I was trying to shine a light on that whole range and not shy away from the fact that there is a temptation to keep the people closest to you at arm's length, and that holds true even when Bartle returns. I mean, there's this fear of loss, of making yourself vulnerable emotionally, and that seemed like something consistent throughout the book.
I loved a lot of the scenes between Bartle and his friend Murph, younger than him by about 3 or 4 years, especially the one where they're sharing a bottle of whiskey, and it's just before they're getting called in to do some kind of deed, but they're kind of joking around and laughing and trying not to laugh out loud. And it is one of those times where you refer to the fact that just like boys would when they're 18 years old or 19 or 20 years old, just goofing around, sharing a bottle of whiskey. And it was sad, too, because, they were going away and one of them wasn't going to make it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in those kind of circumstances, those moments of relaxation is probably not the right word, but those moments where you sort of forget that your circumstances can be profoundly important, and probably in the moment you don't realize that they are. But you're absolutely right. It's a moment where they almost get to escape their circumstances. But of course, as a reader, you realize that that for them, at least in the, in the immediate future, there won't be any escape from that. So it's a reprieve, but as a reader, you're aware that it won't last.
My guest is Kevin Powers, poet, writer, and veteran of the Iraq War. We're talking about his new book, The Yellow Birds. If you have a question or comment for Kevin, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you're a veteran of the Iraq War and want to share your reminiscence, talk with Kevin about that, give us a call. You can also email us, and you can go to our Facebook page. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and join us this afternoon for Talk of the Nation. For her new book, Jean Marie Laskus spent weeks in Ohio in a coal mine. She lived in Alaska on an oil rig and rode along with a long-haul truck driver in Iowa. And that's just the short list. The goal was to examine the lives of people who were often taken for granted. Hidden America, from coal miners to cowboys, an extraordinary exploration of the unseen people who make this country. That discussion during Talk of the Nation from 2 to 4 on 89.7 NPR News. And it's 68 degrees, partly sunny skies with a chance of rain today, warming up to a high near 80. Rain for tonight, a low of 62. Support for 89.7 comes from the United Way of Central Ohio. United Way is working to improve lives and strengthen our community by bringing people bringing together people and organizations to address local issues in education, income, health, and home. More information on how to get involved is at liveunitedcentralohio.org. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
My guest is Kevin Powers, poet, writer, and veteran of the Iraq War. We're talking about his new book. It's called The Yellow Birds. Kevin, once again, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Anne. I appreciate it.
We talked earlier about the first line in the book. Would you mind reading from us the first couple pages of the book and then talking about that?
Not at all. The war tried to kill us in the spring. As grass greened the plains of Nineveh and the weather warmed, we patrolled the low-slung hills beyond the cities and towns. We moved over them and through the tall grass on faith, kneading paths into the windswept growth like pioneers. While we slept, the war rubbed its thousand ribs against the ground in prayer. When we pressed onward through exhaustion, its eyes were white and open in the dark. While we ate, the war fasted, fed by its own deprivation. It made love and gave birth and spread through fire. Then in summer, the war tried to kill us as the heat blanched all color from the plains. The sun pressed into our skin, and the war sent its citizens rustling into the shade of white buildings. It cast a white shade on everything, like a veil over our eyes. It tried to kill us every day, but it had not succeeded. Not that our safety was preordained. We were not destined to survive. The fact is, we were not destined at all. The war would take what it could get. It was patient. It didn't care about objectives or boundaries, whether you were loved by many or not at all. While I slept that summer, the war came to me in my dreams and showed me its sole purpose, to go on, only to go on. And I knew the war would have its way.
That's Kevin Powers, poet, writer, and veteran of the Iraq War. And we're talking about his new book, and that is from his new book, The Yellow Birds. If you have a question or comment for Kevin, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Some of your descriptions about the looping of the day's events sound like the complaints from the men on the ground during the Vietnam War. An example is this paragraph: we'd go back into a city that had fought this battle yearly. A slow, bloody parade in fall to mark the change of season. We'd drive them out. We always had. We'd kill them. They'd shoot us and blow off our limbs and run into the hills and wad us, back into the alleys and dusty villages. Then they'd come back, and we'd start over by waving to them as they leaned against lampposts and unfurled green awnings while drinking tea in front of their shops. While we patrolled the streets, we'd throw candy to their children, with whom we'd fight in the fall a few more years to come. That looping sensation that this is all happening, it's all happened before, it's all going to happen again.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that comes in part from, you know, obviously from my experience of being in the part of Iraq that I was in, and after coming home, seeing that, you know, watching the news and still trying to stay engaged with the what was happening over there, seeing that it almost seemed as if the exact same things were happening, even down to the time of year, you know, particularly in Talifar, where I spent about half of my tour, there was a battle for the city. And then after I returned, I watched the news about the same time the next year, and there was another battle for the city that seemed very much like the one that I was in. I mean, obviously, the people, the soldiers on the ground were from a different unit, but it seemed as if the exact same thing was happening. And it's frightening, you know, not only to be a part of that, but to be aware that that other people are being forced to ask, being forced to do the same thing that you have, knowing how difficult it was for you, and knowing what they might be going through.
Robert in Columbus, you're on the air. Robert, welcome to the show. You're gonna have to turn down your radio though.
I don't have it on. I'm driving.
Oh, okay. It might be your okay. Hi, Robert.
Hi. I just want to commend our young author for his work. I was really blown away by that segment that you read. I hear a lot of Tim O'Brien kind of influence coming from that. I wonder, you know, who else you were influenced by. I'm a combat veteran from the Vietnam War, and I'm a poet, and I can certainly appreciate your so with that.
Kevin?
Yeah, that's such a kind compliment, Robert. I really appreciate it. Obviously, Tim O'Brien is a hugely important writer for me. You know, I mentioned Yusef Kalmanyaka, who's a poet. There's also a poet who's a Vietnam veteran named Bruce Weigel, who's, I think, extraordinary. So there are, I mean, there are a lot of examples of literature about war that that have been important to me. David Jones, who was a soldier in the First World War, wrote a really extraordinary book called In Parenthesis. So they, you know, those would just be a few examples, but again, thank you so much for the compliment. That's very humbling.
Thank you, Robert. Take care. Thanks for the call. If you'd like to call, talk with Kevin Powers, you can go to 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. There was a section in the book you wrote, "We curled ourselves into absurd shapes and huddled below the whitewashed walls of our position. We stayed awake on amphetamines and fear." I was wondering about drugs and to what extent they buoyed you through a lot of the war.
Well, and some of those, you know, some of the instances of descriptions in the book are not necessarily from my own experience, mm-hmm. but, you know, you kind of pick up stories of what some other people might be doing, things like that. I suppose I'm telling on myself in a way, but the thing that I always looked forward to, and persons who shall remain unnamed, we would occasionally be lucky enough to kind of get care packages with little booze in it, which was a nice break, even though it was against the rules. So, you know, those kind of details, you know, they sometimes do come from my own experience, sometimes from observation, and then in other cases, just purely from the imagination. But I thought it was a way of kind of emphasizing that sense of exhaustion that they're experiencing in that moment.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and I'm talking with Kevin Powers, author of The Yellow Birds. When I was a kid, my dad traveled a lot, and there was a plane crash, and I was worried he was on it, and I somehow was able to get a hold of him. This was long before cell phones. And he said, and I said, "I'm not sure I want you to fly on the next plane." And he said, "Don't worry. Statistically, it's very unlikely that the next plane will go down." And I saw or felt that reference a lot in the book. When someone would die, you would, okay, well, if that guy died, then it's not as likely that I'll be dying next.
Right, and that's something that, you know, the two main characters, Bartle and Murph, they fixate on that, and it becomes almost a totem in a way. And, you know, it is sort of a very cold approach to looking at the casualties, but they are, you know, they are operating on survival instincts in a way, and they've just got this kind of fixation that somehow if they avoid becoming a particular casualty, you know, on the list, then they'll be all right. It's a superstition, certainly, but yeah, I think it's sort of demonstrative of the kind of fear and obsession that they're going through.
There's lots of references to the flora, the trees, the bushes, the pear tree, the hyacinths, orchards and former locations of former orchards that have now been burned down or reduced to rubble. That just kept sticking out for me. And I don't know whether it's because I like to garden or what, but there seemed to be a lot of references. And one thing that it did make me feel like is, well, this is kind of like home if they have a pear tree in their backyard. We have a pear tree in our backyard.
Right. Well, I mean, there are instances where, you know, when the narrator is observing these things and thinking back through his memory of those things, where he's looking for a way to locate himself, a way that to find something that feels familiar, something where he can feel like he understands where he is and where he was. And, you know, the Bartle happens to be from a sort of rural area, and, you know, and he notices those things, and I think particularly fixates on trying to find some way where there's something to look at other than looking at the kind of the raw truth of being in combat.
And on the eve of the war, well, let's first talk about the two, Bartle and Murph. Both of them are from Virginia, which they're sort of disappointed at when they meet each other because they were hoping to meet somebody, something more exotic, I guess, if you're Jordy, you know, go travel the world and meet new people, right?
Right, right, yeah.
And yet they were, you talk about destiny and there is no destiny, but, you know, it's like from the moment they meet, they feel destined to know each other and become friends.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, I think there is a sense, I mean, particularly for the story, that they do have this kind of mutual understanding. They relate to each other in a way. And Bartle's not entirely comfortable with that aspect of their relationship. And, you know, to go back to what we were talking about earlier, he's not really sure if he wants to be close to somebody in that way. But he has, you know, by virtue of this promise that he has made to Murph's mother, he has somewhat accidentally forced himself into a situation where he's responsible for Murph.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the eve of their deployment, Murph's mother asks Bart, and Murph is not only younger, but he's smaller and frailer, more fragile. His mother asks Bartle to take care of him, to promise that he would get him home safe, and he makes that promise. And his, I guess it's Sergeant Sterling, later kind of gives him a hard time about it, and then asks him to do the same thing.
Right, right. Well, I mean, I think it's the issue is the guarantee, the promise itself. Mm. You know, Sterling understands that. You can ask somebody to try to do their job, but you can't ask somebody to make a promise like that. So I think that's what he finds, you know, frustrating would probably be a mild way to put it. You know, Sterling, I think, understands that, you know, and he has become obsessed with this idea of being proficient in your job. His whole identity is basically about being as good a soldier as you possibly can to make sure that the people beneath you come home. But he recognizes that it's not something that can be guaranteed.
The Bartle, the protagonist, has, I don't know if love, hate, because I haven't finished the book, so I can't do any spoilers for anybody, but kind of a, I'm not halfway through. But at this point, I'm definitely sensing sort of a love-hate relationship with Sterling, with his sergeant.
Right, and, you know, part of that is that he appreciates his proficiency in his job. He recognizes that, you know, when it comes to surviving combat, that he's in the best hands that he could possibly be in, as far as having a leader like that. But he's also very afraid of what he sees as the kind of sacrifices that Sterling's made with regard to his humanity, his ability to feel compassion. And I think, you know, at the root of that conflict that he's experiencing about Sterling is that he is sort of afraid that he will become him.
Mm-hmm.
And that it might even be necessary to become him if he wants to survive.
Bartle and Murph thought that the military would be a refuge of sorts, a way to get away, but also be in a place where they could be told what to do and when to do it, and where they wouldn't have to be in charge, that they'd be safe.
Right, and I think, you know, they're both very young, and I would say they're both at a time in their lives where the world, particularly if you're from a certain type of place, like they are, kind of a little bit backward, it can be overwhelming. The kind of, what do you do with your life? You know, if you're 18 or 20 and you're from a part of the country, a rural area where there aren't many prospects, what are you supposed to do? And I think that's a question they feel like they've found an answer to by being in the military. It's, well, you just do what you're told. So they don't understand the full implication of giving yourself over in that way. And it's something that particularly Bartle will have to deal with later on, that kind of recognizing his own responsibility in that.
My guest is Kevin Powers. He's a poet, writer, veteran of the Iraq War, and we're talking about his new book. It's called The Yellow Birds. We'll continue when we return. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Jeffrey Toobin about how the Supreme Court decisions on Citizens United and the Affordable Care Act will affect legislation for years to come. His new book is The Oath, The Obama White House and the Supreme Court. Toobin's also the author of the bestseller, The Nine. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Tuesday night on WOSU-TV, learn how Civil War casualty numbers permanently altered the character and psyche of our young nation. Contending with death on an unprecedented scale posed challenges for which there were no ready answers. American Experience presents Death and the Civil War. It's Tuesday night at 8 on WOSU-TV. And support for 89.7 comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation in supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org. And support for 89.7 comes from Montgomery & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, providing a disciplined approach to help individuals and small businesses grow and maintain their wealth. More information is available online at themontgomerysolution.com. And All Sides continues right here on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm talking with Kevin Powers about his debut novel. It's called The Yellow Birds. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Robert. He says a book was published in 2009 by Donovan Campbell entitled Joker One, a Marine platoon's story of courage, leadership, and brotherhood. Joker One was the radio call sign of the platoon Donovan led. This book provides very graphic and sad in many ways details of the experiences from March through September this platoon underwent in Ramadi, Iraq. Is your guest familiar with the real-life experiences this platoon and what they went through with almost daily patrols where the enemy was hidden among the civilians? Kevin?
I'm familiar with those aspects of serving in Iraq, but I have to confess I'm not familiar with the book that's being referenced.
There was one when we were talking earlier about the how the looping process that, you know, taking the hill over and over and over again, or taking the town over and over again. You did, of course, get in the Ohio-Michigan reference. Hell yes, Private, he said, I was already in the first one. This is going to be, this expletive going to be bigger than Ohio State, Michigan. Where, I mean,
right.
I guess it's the tradition that you were, it was almost a tradition by then?
Yeah, or that they saw that it was, you know, they saw it as a kind of inevitability that it was just going to be something that happened every single year. You know, you gather in this one place, fight it out, you know, and it's a way, you know. And again, you know, I mean, I confess that there aren't very many moments of humor in the book, but I just thought that was a way of indicating that kind of the perspective that he has versus the sort of perspective that the other soldier has, the other soldiers have, excuse me. Yeah, he sort of recognizes that, at least in his own mind, that they might as well think about it like that because there's really nothing they can do about it.
You write about the media. You talk about the media in this story and in some cases how the media is setting up shots between a commanding officer and the rank and file. And in another case, Bartle is thinking about the reporter and asking him what combat felt like. You're right. We hated having him around, but we'd been ordered to tolerate him. So when he came up to a group of us lounging in the dust beneath a large shade tree on base, saying, "Tell me the essence, guys. I want to know the kind of rush you get." Most of us ignored him. A few told him to go, you know, told him what to do with himself. But tell us about the idea of having the media cover it that way. Was that your experience?
Well, in some ways, you know, it was not necessarily exactly like that. And it's funny. I think that obviously the journalists do an incredibly important job. You know, at great personal risk to themselves, they provide people with the information of what's happening on the ground day to day. But when you're a soldier, you know, and you may be trying to get the only sort of 10 minutes of sleep that you're going to get that day, there are moments when it's hard not to feel like a prop in somebody else's story, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
You sort of feel like, I mean, it's difficult, particularly when you're so young and you don't understand the kind of the necessity of having those stories get out. It can be unsettling to think that, you may see a camera, you may have somebody asking you questions, and you begin to think, what is this? Is this for entertainment? What is my purpose here, and why is this, why does this seem to be something that other people want to know about? It can be a difficult thing to understand, really. And, I wanted to show that in those moments, they don't understand what the point is. And they do kind of feel like a prop.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, you know, I wouldn't say it's a crucial element of the book, but it's something that I did want to touch on.
Well, he asks, tell me the essence, guys. I want to know the kind of rush you get. And I was wondering, is that something you even end up talking about with anybody ever?
No, not really. I don't think so. I mean, perhaps it's something that you may confide to somebody who's shared that experience with you, or somebody that you know is another veteran. I mean, those kinds of things that you feel you can talk about with those people. But I mean, again, that just speaks to one of the things that I try to write about after Bartle gets home, is that feeling of profound separation and isolation, the feeling that you're sort of imprisoned in your memories and your own experience, and that you're left to deal with them on your own because people don't understand that and perhaps can't. So yeah, I mean, there is a way that you both keep it to yourself and are afraid to share it. So it's a complicated way of existing in the world.
How hard is it to tell whether somebody's becoming unstable around you when you're in war? Somebody's not handling it, like, perhaps is that even anything you think about? You look around you and the fellows that you're sharing the space with and sharing the risk with, if you worry about some of them maybe losing their mind.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, with regard to what Bartle sees in Murph, it is difficult for him at first because they're all at such a heightened state of existence. I mean, they are operating at the extreme. So to see that, you know, when Murph begins to kind of drift off, when he does sort of begin to lose himself, mm-hmm. Bartle doesn't really at first understand what's happening. Once he does, he doesn't really know what to do about it. And again, you know, we go back to those questions of responsibility, the kinds of promises that he's made, the kind of accountability that he ultimately feels an extraordinary amount of guilt about. I mean, it's really difficult to know because I think when the experience is so, to begin with, difficult, I mean, we could be talking about a matter of degree, mm-hmm. a very small matter of degree that, you know, and we've started to see, you know, recently there have been reports that that suicides are surpassing battlefield casualties. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure where that line is and how you know that somebody's crossed it. I really don't.
Just joining me, my guest is Kevin Powers, poet, writer, and veteran of the Iraq War, and we're talking about his new book. It's his debut novel. It's called The Yellow Birds. If you have a question or comment for Kevin, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, I know there's still conflict in Iraq. Nothing was necessarily particularly resolved, but we're out of that war now, and I was wondering, could you have written it if the war there was still going on?
Well, you know, when I started writing it, it was. You know, right. I began it sometime in 2007. You know, I think for me, you know, and again, I mean, it's partly the function of acknowledging that I'm trying to tell one story and I'm not trying to tell anybody else's story. So I did feel freedom to, once I had the kind of time and imaginative distance to look at my own experience, I did feel free to approach the subject. Certainly there were moments when I felt uncomfortable kind of approaching the subject, knowing that, you know, there are people, even though this is a work of the imagination, that there are people dealing with these awful, awful circumstances as we speak. Mm-hmm. But you know, I felt, you know, as a writer, as a person who tries to understand the world through language and through story, you know, I felt a kind of obligation to myself to really approach it as honestly, as directly as I could.
When you were brought home, you're in the airport. The lieutenant, they wake you up on the airplane. You get off at the terminal, and You said, I keep saying you, but I mean Bartle. The lieutenant gave a safety brief. Standard stuff. Wrap it up. Don't drink and drive if your old lady is pissing you off. Remember? We answered in unison. Instead of a slug, give her a hug. We stood tightly in formation until the first sergeant barked, dismissed. You know, I've had lots of different shows on about returning veterans from the wars, and the, you know, Army spokespeople and military spokespeople in general insist that, no, we're working really hard to prepare people for returning home and the culture shock and blah, blah, blah. That was pretty shocking to read that.
Right.
And I was wondering if that is, at least back in the day when you started writing the book, was that the case? They just let you go with that?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, it probably depends on who you talk to. It probably did require some time for them to develop a strategy, and then it also has to, once that kind of strategy of how to approach the returning soldier is developed, mm-hmm. you have to let it kind of, in a way, trickle down into the culture of the you know, the enlisted soldier. No, I mean, so I don't doubt that they are trying very hard, as hard as they possibly can, to make sure people are safe and as well as they can possibly be. But particularly given the time period that I'm talking about, mm-hmm. when it's essentially the second year and third year of the war, and I don't think people had a handle on what it was. There was still that kind of tough guy, macho attitude of, you know, nothing's wrong, don't worry about it, suck it up. So yeah, I mean, whether things have changed drastically or not, I honestly couldn't tell you. One would hope that they would have.
Byron in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Byron.
Yes, Ann, thanks for taking my call. Kevin, congratulations to you. Just a couple of quick things. I am a Vietnam veteran myself, and so that should tell you something about where I'm coming from. The name, I've not read the book. I have every intention of doing that. The name, it's Bartle, your main character. Is it any connection with Bartleby the Scrivener and his famous, I prefer not to, kind of mentality in the military? And the other thing is the title itself. I wonder if it has some connection with the yellow ribbons that you see, if that's the connection. As I say, I haven't read it, but just quickly.
Right. Yeah, thanks very much, Byron. So when I was looking for a name for the character, you know, I did think about kind of what are his defining characteristics, and there is a fundamental numbness and this kind of desire to stop participating. So that was kind of an inspiration, at least for the name, and it is one of my favorite pieces of writing. Absolutely. So that was kind of a little bit of an homage, if you will. And as to the second question about the title, you know, I think that there are a lot of, for me anyway, the Yellow Birds has a lot of, elusive qualities. I mean, I think of, there's a moment in the book where they're thinking about canaries in the mind, in the mind, not in mm-hmm. the mind. But also this idea of yellow. I mean, one of the things that Bartle thinks about is, his own cowardice. He feels like a coward very often. So I just thought that the title was rich sort of thematically, and that it would communicate a lot. So I appreciate the questions.
Thank you, Byron.
Congratulations again. You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Byron. Appreciate it.
Just a few minutes left. If you want to make that call, make it now, 614-292-8513. If you want to talk with Kevin Powers, we're talking about his debut novel, The Yellow Birds. Are you eager to see more stories from this era, Kevin?
I am, absolutely. I mean, I think that the more people begin to write about their experiences, whether it's fiction, nonfiction, poetry, you know, I happen to believe that art is good for the world, and that art that is born and these kinds of experience can be good for both the civilian and the veteran community, as a way of us sort of beginning to understand each other. And there have been, I mean, David Abrams has a book out called Phobit. Brian Turner, who's, I think, an extraordinary poet, has been writing some really fantastic poetry about the experience of Iraq. And there are other, I know there are other books coming down the line. You know, Ben Fountain has the book Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, and although he's not a veteran, certainly it's important to have these kinds of imaginative acts to lay the groundwork for some sort of discussion and understanding. So I'm sure it will continue, and we'll get a lot of different voices, and I definitely look forward to that.
You mentioned in an interview, I think it was on CBS, that if you weren't a writer, you could see yourself as a high school history or English teacher, and I was wondering how you would go about teaching subjects like the Iraq War or just wartime literature in general, and how that might, your own experience might have changed that.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting question. I think for me, the focus is on, would be potentially, although I'm not a teacher, trying to have the students recognize how close in age these people are, that they're being asked to mature at a rate that may be impossible. They're the kind of life experience that's compressed into such a short period of time can be terribly difficult to deal with. So, I mean, I think I would take that approach. And some of these, you know, some of those books are, I think, some of the great works of art in human history. And on that level, they can be appreciated as well. So it would be an interesting task. You know, one of the reasons that I said that is simply because I had teachers that were so important to me.
Kevin Powers, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Kevin Powers is a poet, writer, and veteran of the Iraq War. His novel is called The Yellow Birds. It's a story of two soldiers trying to stay alive. Thanks for listening. Thanks to the All Sides staff. Associate producer Amy Jurovich, All Sides assistant producer Corinne Gleckler, production assistants Katie Higgins and Leticia Wiggins, volunteer Rose Joe, and with video production by Rich and Amber Karsmitsky. Once again, thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.